I think we have quorum, so we will call this meeting to order. The meeting of the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee is called to order. Ms. Doe, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee John Butler. Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here.
Committee Chair Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee Tim Moore.
Here.
Board Chair Eric Wazowitz.
I'm here. I'd like to add that it's Vice Chair Wazowitz.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Just so that it happened.
I've worked.
Board Vice Chair Montel Gales.
There we go. Okay, move on to number two. Mr. Perry, could you please verify that we have quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Mr. Chair, you do have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you very much. Move on to number three. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
So moved.
Okay, Chair Wazowitz, Vice Chair Gales, approved. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The meeting agenda is approved. We'll move on to number four. Review and approval of the minutes from the meeting of May 11th, 2023, which are in your package. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Chair Wazowitz, thank
second.
You. Thank you. The second by Trustee Herrero. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes of the meeting of May 11th of 2023 are approved. At this point in time, I would welcome any comments from any members of the University Advisory Committee who are present here today. Does anybody on the committee have any comments?
You'll hear from me later, but as of right now, I have no comment.
Okay, thank you, Brad. I think you're the only member of the committee here right now. Am I correct?
Right now, I believe that's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll move on to chair's comments. Well, first of all, good morning. I would like to, on behalf of the FACFO committee and on behalf of the board, welcome all new Huskies to campus, as well as all returning Huskies back to campus. As you have heard a couple of times throughout the morning, there's been amazing faculty and staff who have volunteered their time across the campus to help our incoming students get acclimated. And our returning students to start their year on a successful note. To these faculty and staff, we as a board extend a heartfelt thank you for all you do for our students. The board and I wish our students, faculty, and staff all the best for the coming year. To our amazing students, thank you for entrusting NIU to help you through your next chapter of success. Our meeting for today's, our agenda for today's meeting will include three recommendations for approval, including one that will go to the special meeting that will follow this meeting because of that subject being, or that item being time sensitive. We will also hear an update from John Heckman on the campus faculty projects. At this point in time, we wish to recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and the Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely request to address this meeting?
Mr. Chair, we have no public comment this morning.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to number seven, financial update. These are information only items to be presented. And just to give the board kind of a heads up here, items 7A and 7B flow together. So I'm not gonna ask for any comments after 7A. We will take comments or questions after item 7B is discussed. So at this point in time, I would turn it over to Vice Pres- President and Chief Financial Officer George Mittelmist to present the University Financial Update. George?
Thank you, Trustee Barsima. Agenda item 7A is the fiscal year 2022 audit and financial results. I'd like to welcome Cherie Sannon, Associate Vice President for Finance and Treasury Operations, to give the report.
Thank you, Dr. Mittelmist. Good morning, trustees and President Freeman. Cherie. And thank you for the opportunity to present the financial updates. The fiscal year 22 audit and financial results report provides a high-level summary of the university's financial statements and financial audit results. The auditors provided an unmodified audit opinion, meaning that the financial information is reliable and complies with acceptable accounting standards. Two exceptions were noted in the report related to the statewide CSRS CMS census data testing and an isolated and immaterial error related to revenue recognition. Corrective actions around both these items were implemented before June 30th, 2023, and the probability of a repeat finding is low. As for the financial results, net position remained relatively flat compared to the previous year as a result of temporary positive impacts from the pandemic relief funds and a one-time non-operating revenue from the bond refinancing. The COVID pandemic relief funds ended June 30th, 2023, so the cash and revenue benefits from these funds will not be available going forward. The university's working capital declined below the target range as a result of continued pressures on cash. However, there are sufficient resources to meet current obligations. Lastly, the university's long-term debt decreased significantly as a result of the debt restructuring that occurred in fiscal 22. Even though a significant amount of savings was front-loaded in the first 4 years, there will continue to be savings annually going forward through the life of the bonds. The key takeaway is that the university has some fiscal challenges, but maintains a relatively sizable scope of operation and very good overall wealth. However, we must address rising expense pressures and stabilize enrollment. The university's current efforts to address these pressures with the Strategic Enrollment Management 2.0 plan, the efforts to modify our footprint and cost structure, and the multi-year planning and budgeting efforts underway was recognized as positive by Moody's during their rating upgrade of the university in May of 2023. Moving on to the fiscal 22 external audit corrective action plans update. The university's fiscal 22 compliance audit was released on July 6, 2023. There were 16 audit findings, of which 13 were repeated from the prior year. The total number of findings decreased by 2 compared to the prior year. The average number of findings received for all 9 Illinois public institutions was 13. While the results of the annual financial and state compliance examination note specific areas where we can improve, it's important to note that the auditors found that all public funds NIU received were used as intended and that the university complied with the laws and regulations, including the state uniform accounting system. NIU's leadership takes all findings seriously, and we're working to address all issues in a timely manner. Everyone is committed to making the necessary changes to ensure we are following best practices as good stewards of our resources. The enclosed chart prepares a list of each finding, the actions the university has taken to address the finding, the status of those corrective actions, the responsible areas, and the probability that the finding will repeat in the next audit cycle. It's important to note that repeat findings do not necessarily indicate chronic problems. Many findings may recur for a year or two simply because of the timing of the audit cycle. The university's commitment to eliminating findings is demonstrated by the fact that 5 findings from the fiscal 21 audit did not repeat in fiscal 22, including a longstanding property control finding and the highly visible BEP finding. In addition to eliminating the BEP finding, I would like to recognize Antoinette Bridges, our Director of Procurement Services and Contract Management, who recently received IPEC's Commitment to Diversity Award for her leadership in helping NIU achieve the highest overall growth and BEP spend achievement among the Illinois public universities. That was 162% growth.
Just stop right
there. The director of IPAC stated, "Antoinette is such a joy to work with and always provides such valuable input. We're grateful to have her as part of our purchasing directors group." And of course, this was a campus-wide effort. I think Antoinette will be the first to recognize that. And it was made possible by the support of her team, who's all here to support her, and our campus partners across campus, and also President Freeman's leadership, who has made BEP an institutional priority. So thank you. This concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have before I move on to the cash and investment report.
Thank you, Cherie. I would bring attention to the board and to our public attendees. If you look at page 10 on the report, you know, there you'll see a really good chart, and I really have enjoyed working with, and thank you for all the work that your team has done, George, in putting this together. Oh, great. and where it gives a really good summary of the fiscal year 22 findings and corrective actions in terms of, you know, what the finding is, the status, the category, the area that's responsible for that, and then the repeat the probability of repeat for next year. So I bring your attention to that. So as a board, I just want to thank you again and just share with you that we take very seriously our responsibility to uphold fiscal health and operational compliance and statutory requirements. The financial results, once again, report that the university's downward trend in net resources, with another decline expected for fiscal year 23 financial audit. This report further shows the focus on the need for this institution and leadership to continue to come together to close the budget deficit by operating leaner and deploying new methods for revenue generation. I am glad, as is the whole board, that our rating with Moody's continues to improve. I think I heard you say the words creation of wealth. I like that. As we all believe in the good work that we are doing here at NIU to solidify our financial standing. Regarding the audit, I'm glad to see that we're down by two findings from last year. That's great. And it helps the board to see the findings laid out in this manner, as I gave reference to. And in this chart, again, we note the items that are already being addressed or will be addressed, and those which are more complex in terms of our response. I would also like to echo Cherie's comments to commend Dr. Bridges. Thank you for the work of you and your team in our efforts to strengthen our BEP participation. That's awesome results, so thank you. Great strides have been made, and I'm glad to see that we are being recognized. We look forward to any future progress in this area. And please, of course, always let us know as a board what we can do to help you both now and going forward. So with that, some comments?
I do.
Please.
Thank you very much. It is with the team that makes this happen, but also with our partners throughout the university. But more importantly, we get the leadership support. So I got a plaque, and so I thought it was only befitting that President Freeman gets one as well.
Oh, What does it say?
I'm like just so surprised. It says leading by example and celebrates our commitment to vendor diversity. And I think everyone has elevated the importance of teams today in all the presentations that were given. I think that's so appropriate for a community that calls themselves Huskies, because we are all pulling in the same direction and moving forward together. And I think the genuine appreciation that all of us have for each other as we strive to do better, this gesture just captures that. And thank you, everybody. And let's make sure that Cherie and George also get a hand, because it starts from there.
And if I can, I add one small thing. So, you know, that type of change doesn't happen without a really dedicated team and staff and leader, but it also that the board is always in the know. And, you know, I would totally credit here my fellow trustee Gales, who keeps us all, like, you know, keeps this idea, the BEP goals, like, right in front of us all the time, every meeting.
Thank you.
Well, it's a great example of, you know, when you apply the right focus and the right people and the right processes, good things can happen. And so, you know, we've made great strides. Thank you, you know, to you and your team, Doc, to Bridges. You know, it's amazing. And, you know, we have more work to do. But, you know, the strides that we've made and the strides and the recognition that we're receiving within the state, you know, I think is outstanding. So thank you very much. Other comments on 7A or 7B before we move on to 7C? Okay, hearing none, George, we'll move on to 7C.
Agenda item 7C is the annual report of cash and investments for the period ending June 30, 2023. Cherie Sannon, Associate Vice President for Finance and Treasury Operations, will give the report.
Okay. So this report includes three key schedules: the annual report of depositories, cash and investment holdings summary, and the investment earnings for the quarter. A thorough written update is provided in your material, so I'll just highlight a few key points from the reports. The report of depository is submitted annually in accordance with board regulations. The depository report summarizes beginning balances, deposits, withdrawals, and ending balances for each bank account and does not include funds invested in fixed income securities. I would like to draw your attention to a correction on the JP Morgan Chase CD. The ending balance should be $1 million rather than $1.5 million. We were able to successfully negotiate a reduction in the required collateral balance for the commercial card program after this report was prepared, and unfortunately missed making that update to this report. This correction transfers funds from the JP Morgan depository account to the fixed income securities, but it does not impact the overall cash and investment holding balance. And also, the Build America bond proceeds were expended by June 30th, 2023. So I'll pause there before I move on for any to the cash and investment holding summary, see if there's any questions about the correction.
Great. Thank you, Cherie. Well, while it's not ideal to see the $15 million year-over-year reduction in our holdings, we are grateful for the transparent reporting and also the talk that we've had that has informed us, and this was anticipated. Thank you to the leadership of NIU and the entire finance team for your continued hard work, and we look forward to discussing the fiscal year 23 year-end performance at our next FACFO meeting, which will be in November. The year-end report, in conjunction with budget updates for the current fiscal year, will without a doubt set the stage for some critical conversations and actions as we continue to move forward with the effort to strengthen the health of NIU from a financial standpoint. Any other questions about 7C from any of the trustees?
I wasn't done with my comments, but I can be.
Okay, no, please, if you have more, go, Cherie. You gave me the nod. I distinctly saw the nod.
That was the depository report. The cash and investment holdings summary report shows the university's total cash and investment holdings balance is just over $127 million as of June 30th. That is down $15 million from the same time last year. This decrease was anticipated and is primarily a result of increases in cash disbursements while cash receipts have held relatively flat. And of the total holding balance, there's approximately $65 million that is available for daily operations, which provides about 60 days of cash on hand. And this operating cash balance is sufficient to meet the university's current obligations for approximately 2 months. The remaining balance is restricted per collateralization requirements and contractual obligations, including funds held for investment. And then moving on to the investment earnings schedule, the overall annualized rate of return on investments was 4.96%, and interest earned was $1.8 million for the fourth quarter. This represents an increase in interest earned of approximately $1.5 million when compared to the same quarter last fiscal year. The Federal Open Markets Committee increased the federal funds rate an additional 25 basis points at its July meeting, bringing the federal funds rate range between 5.5 and 5.0%. Economists are predicting that or anticipating that the committee will vote to keep the funds of Fed funds rate flat at the September meeting and then again in November. And so we'll continue to monitor the market changes and seek the best cash management and investment strategy to help strengthen the university's cash position. Thank you.
Now I got the nod. Thank you, Cherie. okay. Now, are there any further questions on 7C for Cherie or George?
When we say we have the amount of money on reserve for so many months, et cetera, is that in line with some sort of university standard or?
There's a benchmark that Moody's uses, and we are below, 2 months is below the benchmark, but it's what we can pretty much manage now, given our liquidity. It gets us through the low peaks of the cash cycle. Okay. And so, as you see, there's a lot more cash available, but it's collateralized or it's restricted. So if we had to draw on it, we could. Okay. But what we have as far as daily operations, it's about 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. On page 15, it shows the market value by investment type. So I know we are, we are given guidance on the types of things we can invest in by the state, but are we given our, do we have guidance or do we have to adhere to the percentage of the portfolio that goes into each of these investment types?
So our investment policy does restrict, I'm not remembering the name, but the investment type. So we can't have more than 50% of anything other than treasuries. I think it's called asset allocation, right? Yeah. So we can't have more than 50% of any other investment other than U.S. treasuries, which is considered one of the safest investments.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm assuming that given where we are today and where we have been going from an interest rate standpoint, we're maximizing to the best of our ability. The investments. Okay, great. Further questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll now move on to number eight. The recommendations and action items. So again, at this point in time, I would ask Vice President and CFO George Mittelmus to present the university recommendations in section eight.
Thank you, Trustee Barsema. So first, I just want to say that I am super excited. We only have A, B, and C as the agenda items, and that we're not getting into the Q's and the Z's. So this should be good. The first agenda item, 8A, is the Miles Education, Inc. contract. This is a contract that has a not to exceed of $1.5 million before the board for approval. But I want to emphasize that this contract is really about revenue generation. This is an opportunity that we have to shore up enrollment challenges in the Masters of Accountancy program. Across the nation, there's a shortage of accountants, and there's also a shortage of accounting students. And so Miles is a company based out of India that recruits students from India to come to the U.S. to get their master's degree and their CPA to either come back to India and work for accounting firms in India, but also to recruit them to address the shortage of accountants to stay in the U.S. and work for the Big Four or multinational corporations. And so a really innovative way to address the shortfall in the Masters of Accountancy program. The reason that the program is struggling is not because of the accounting department, it's because of the rules and the laws that are changing to get your CPA. It used to be to get a CPA, you had to get your master's in accounting, or at least take 30 additional hours, which happened to be a master's in accounting. And the state of Illinois and across the country, to address the shortage of accountants, has reduced that to 120 hours. So now this incentive to get a master's degree is gone, other than trying to further your education like I did when I got my master's degree. So the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on August 24th, 2023.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8A?
So moved.
Thank you, Trustee Gales. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Trustee Herrero. Is there any discussion? I do have a question. So how do we know that the students that we're recruiting are that they have the right knowledge of what they're coming here for, because they're coming from India, right? And so I want to make sure that from a transparency standpoint that they know exactly what they're coming here for, and that we know that we have a good fit. And I'm not familiar with Miles, and so I see our interim Dean Schambachler. So thank you for being here, Dean Schambachler. And also before you comment, let me also, we talked before about the search for the dean in the College of Business, but thank you for stepping forward to be the interim dean for the College of Business. We are very fortunate. For those of you that may not know the history of Dean Schambachler, she was the dean of the College of Business for 10 years. Retired back on to faculty, and now we brought her back into the dean's office for this year. So thank you, Denise, for stepping forward. The college couldn't be in better hands during this interim period. So thank you.
Oh, turn it on. Okay. Well, you retire for a year, forget how to do everything. So Miles Education, first of all, Trustee Barsima, to answer, we thoroughly vetted this organization. They're a partner with AAA, the American Accounting Association. They're a partner and sponsored AECSB and represented there. And of course, those are both respected organizations that have looked at them. We're a little behind on this, and we'll tell you some of the other schools that have already partnered with Miles, in part because we took the time, particularly through Department Chair Brett Kripe, who's here, and our Director of Global Programs, Anthony Preston, to make sure this was an acceptable deal for us, given the reputation and history of our accounting program. When Miles recruits the students, they come to us with a degree. Every applicant that they bring to NIU, we have the opportunity to review those applicants and make the final admission decision. So it's not an automatic, here's a cohort, you got them.
We've worked with NIU Legal on the contract, and that's ready to go whenever we're all ready to go with that. And one of the things in there, again, that's addressed is that admissions procedure and who gets the final say on which students come here and what their credentials are. They have accounting degrees, and most of the candidates have roughly 5 years' experience working in accounting. They want that CPA. They want that additional designation. And again, as George so clearly articulated, it's closing some gaps and a revenue generation source for us. The other schools that have already partnered with Miles, the first was Case Western Reserve. They were the pilot school. And since that time, we have DePaul, University of Northern Iowa, Drexel, Tulane, okay, are some of the schools that already are bringing students in this fall. So we don't want to miss out on an opportunity.
Are the students in, and it may have been stated and I missed it, wouldn't be surprised at that at all, but will the students come here to our campus or will this be remote learning?
Great question. They will come here. So one of the other advantages that we see as an opportunity for our current MAS or Masters of Accounting Science and graduate students to get to interface and interact, right, with global students from India.
Yeah, awesome. Great. Further questions on Miles?
So the monies that they're paying into the program, is that simply for the education, or does that give them housing and food, room and board, et cetera?
So our part of that is it's tuition. And then they're obviously in the report, they do charge a fee, right, to recruit the students, and that's where the expenditure, depending on the level of enrollment, could get significant.
Okay. And one other
But then the revenue could get significant, too.
One other follow-up. Is the program capped at the number of students? Because I see on our charts here, 25 to 50. Is the 50 the cutoff?
No.
Okay, can you go beyond that?
Correct.
Okay. I'm assuming that we would pay Miles only after the student has been here and successfully completed the program, or when do we pay the $5,000?
That's part of the contract negotiations we're working on now with NIU Legal, exactly when that gets paid. But okay. Once admitted is the way it's set up right now. Okay. So once we admit them and they arrive here, they get here kind of thing.
Okay.
It's not after they finish, so there's a risk there, obviously.
Right, right.
One other question. Yeah. Are there any other Miles corporations that we're working with within the Department of within the business school? Or is Miles the only one? Because, you know, they're coming from India. Is there someone from Singapore? Is it?
No. So for this particular, in fact, they asked for some exclusivity in terms of that relationships, attracting them to this MAC program. We've got a number of other partnerships for some cohort models, but nothing that is akin to this, right? They're a little more than an agent. So there's agents, international agents that just recruit. This organization does more on the advising, the mentoring, and getting them ready and prepared, and then the deal that we get to pick who comes.
Miles is located in India, aren't they?
Correct. They're also incorporated in Delaware.
Right. Yeah.
So is this...
them and everybody else.
So just for clarification, is this sole source? Is this a sole source vendor?
I'm sorry?
Is this a sole source vendor?
What's the contractual relationship? Do we bid for this service, or
yeah.
We saw an opportunity and it fits into the sole source procurement?
I'll tell you what, the contract's at, go ahead, George.
So this is a revenue generating contract, right? Although there's a component of it that's an expense, because it's revenue generating, it doesn't need to go out to bid or sole source. And we'll actually be bringing a similar agreement before the board in September, where we hope to generate even more revenue.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not for the business school or for graduate programs, okay. But for adult learners. So okay. More to come. Stay tuned.
Okay. Then I guess my question, maybe this is for you, George. So then are there other companies that do this? And how do we evaluate, like, you know, I'm not sure I've acknowledge this kind of an agreement, so I'm a little bit confused.
Can I start and then turn it over
sure.
to George? So, you know, when you say how do we evaluate this, there are really two components, and we've heard both of those components raised by the board. So for a contract like this to go to due diligence within administration and finance, the academic unit has to believe that the contractual partnership has integrity, that we are recruiting students who can succeed, that we are doing something that will enrich our programs, that's consistent with our mission, vision, and values. So it would rise up from the college, as it had here, after the college had done due diligence. And at that point, administration and finance says, okay, the college believes that this could academically be advantageous and support enrollment and revenue generation through that mechanism while enriching our students. But then they do their own interrogation on what that means in terms of the validity of the revenue generation projections. And I'll let George talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what we do, right? So we work with the school or college to look at their pro forma, right? And we challenge the perceptions, right? It, you know. Are you really likely to get 25 students? Is it going to be two? If you only get two, what are the risks associated with that? What are the costs? In this particular case, we pay Miles $5,000 for a recruited student that's been admitted, working on the timing of when that payment happens. And we generate over $17,000 in revenues. And so the risk is very minimal because we only pay if they recruit the student. And then it's a net profit because we have capacity in that program right now to have students. And so and we try and instill that discipline in all types of transactions like this.
Thank you. I'm the first question, though, do we know if there are others who do this kind of work for the accounting specifically?
Oh, that I don't know.
Yeah, there are international agents, organizations that do this type of thing in different parts of the world. Miles is the only one that we're vetting and working with right now.
Okay, thank you.
And where our exclusivity is only for India. So should there pop up a partner in Singapore or other places around the world that we vet and determine is an opportunity for us, as long as it's not in India, then that exclusivity doesn't matter.
Okay, so as long as we've got a practice in place, I guess, a policy, do you have a question, sorry?
Well, no, I'm just kind of, I mean, this has been going on in IT for years. I mean, it's just, there's a shortage of labor and that's what happens in these things. So this is not some new thing. There's a shortage of accountants, therefore that's coming. There's been a shortage of IT for 30 years, so. You see similar things like this going on. So I'm not sure if we're using that in our CS department today, but, or, you know, maybe we are, maybe we aren't, maybe we are in OMIS, I don't know, but still, you see those types of things going on when there's a labor shortage like this. I'm just surprised to see it in accounting. I didn't know about it until we had our briefing, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Having done contracts like this before in the business life, you know, the things you have to watch out for, and it sounds like you're in contract negotiations with them as we speak. The things you have to watch out for are how long do they have a right to that student? So for example, they're out marketing this and somebody says, great, but not right for me right now, you know, and so 3 years from now, the student contacts NIU and they want to come to NIU. Does that student belong to Miles and now we have to pay Miles? Or so that you need to negotiate and just be transparent and have an understanding right up front. The other thing is that what happens if the student comes and a month into it, 2 months into it, they go home for whatever reason. Wasn't the right program for them, they need to go home for family reasons, et cetera, et cetera. You know, then what happens? You know, you don't want to pay them $5,000 and we get no revenue. So, you know, all those things need to be, you know, need to be negotiated. But, you know, the one in particular is I have a good feel for how they work. I mean, I don't know them, but I have a feel for how agents like this work or companies like this work. They're going to do a lot of marketing on our behalf, and they're going to get the word out there. And so the question will become, if a student comes to us directly, but they might have heard about us through a marketing material or a presentation that they got from Miles, who, you know, do we owe miles or do we not owe, you know, do we not owe miles, you know, for that student coming here? No.
Yeah, there's usually a time period around that. So they're paper for performance headhunters. So that's how that works.
And I don't have it in front of me, but we've worked with NIU Legal, Tiffany, who's been amazing on a lot of these details and a lot
almost without a doubt, you will get at least a student who will get here and a month or two into it, they will leave. it just happens. Stuff happens, right? And so, you know, you really need to be clear on what happens, you know, when somebody doesn't complete the program. And we don't get the full tuition that we were expecting.
Yeah, check in with Dennis and I on this. We work for free, so we can
we'll be happy to sit at the table with you.
So just to be clear on my questions, it's not that I don't value this kind of service and understand the value that we would get from this because it's a revenue generating agreement. It was really like, I just wanted to make sure that we were, that, you know, that we were following, that there was a policy and a practice that was this and that would allow us to do this without going to bid, right? To really evaluate different vendors that might be doing this. That was what I was trying to clarify, and which you have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions or comments? You good? Okay.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion to approve. We have a second. We've had discussion. So all those in favor of agenda item 8A, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 8A is approved. Agenda item 8B.
Agenda item 8B is the bowl game participation expenses. So for when we go to the bowl this year, we're asking the board for the ability to
said that last year,
but I wasn't here last year. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 21st, 2023.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8B?
So moved.
Thank you, trustee. Okay. Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
So, trustee Barsima, I would say that as I'm reading here, for 11 of the past 15 seasons, we've gone to a bowl. So the chances are better than
chances are good.
Better than 50-50.
So. Ah, good. Coach thinks we're going to have a great team this year. So. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Or comment? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of agenda item 8B, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 8B is passed. Agenda item 8C.
Agenda item 8C is the Loudoun Hall heat exchanger replacement. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on August 24th, 2023.
That was quick. Okay, thank you. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8C?
So moved, Gales.
Thank you, Trustee Gales. Is there a second?
Second, Herrero.
Thank you, Trustee Herrero. Is there any discussion on 8C?
What is it? You don't know what that is?
I'm asked John Heckman to join us.
What are we buying?
You don't know that.
We're changing heat.
It seems like an odd topic on a day like today, but during the winter, of course, we have to heat our buildings. We distribute that heat through steam distribution. So taking the heat from the steam, you need a way to transfer that heat from the steam into the air that gets moved around the building. So this heat exchanger is that element. It's a bundle of tubes, airs go across those hot tubes, heats the air, and that's what we need to change out.
Is this we're replacing an exchanger that's finished in 65? Is that right?
Yeah, Loudoun's been around that long. So sometimes we're lucky and the components last a good long time, and other times. So we got some good life out of this one.
I don't want to influence the trustees' vote, but I will say the majority of the audience here work in Loudoun Hall, so keep that in mind.
That's a good point.
What say you? Okay. Thank you, John. Further discussion or questions? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion 8C is passed. Okay, that does it for the action items. We will now move on to agenda item 9, which is the university reports. George, I'll turn it back over to you.
There are three items as a part of today's university report. One item will include a presentation. The other two items are strictly informational. NIU board regulations stipulate that the university presents regular summaries of designated activities, including financial and property transaction, as well as confirmation that state and federal requirements are met. The three reports provided include comprehensive written updates and are submitted in accordance with board regulations. Agenda item 9A is a semi-annual progress report of active capital projects update and presentation. I invite John Heckman, Associate Vice President for Facilities Management and Campus Services, to give the update and presentation.
Okay, while our slides are coming up, I want to emphasize that I am not going to go through the 62 projects we have listed on the semi-annual report, of course. So indulge and read through that at your leisure. But I do want to give an opportunity to give you a kind of a pictorial story of what's been happening over the summer. So thank you for this opportunity to share what we have going on across the campus, and there's quite a bit. So let me get into it. I have a little over of a handful of the slides with, like I said, picture collages to provide that overview. And afterwards, I'm going to transition to the team that's been leading the Health Technology Center project and let them bring you up to speed on the design and project progress, if I can speak here this afternoon. Next slide, please. So this first project I'll highlight has sometimes been referred to as our mole project because of the extensive excavations it's caused throughout the campus. Starting back in April this year near the stadium, repairs have been progressing at key locations across our steam distribution network. The project kicked into higher gear for the summer with some major excavations, as you see up here in the pictures, between DeSable and Gable, south of Cole Hall, the creek crossing at Neptune, and even behind us adjacent to Elk Hill. The project is repairing and rebuilding as necessary the steam tunnel to help ensure reliable connections for our steam distribution. Most excavations have been backfilled by this time, and the project is looking to fully complete by October, well in time to support our winter heating season. Next slide, please. The next state project I'll highlight is the structural repairs that we've been doing to the Visual Arts Building. This project started in the March timeframe, and has been systematically addressing the major deterioration areas, such as the main entrance stairs, supporting columns, and other structural points on the building. Significantly loud operations can be associated with this type of work, and we expect that to be well behind us, so we should have much less class disruptions as we start the fall semester. Completion is tracking for October this fall. Next slide, please. To round out the state projects, I wanted to make note of a significant milestone for the boiler replacement project. This summer's activity has been administrative in nature, allowing the design-build contract to actually be awarded. If all falls into place as it should, we are now on a timeline which should allow us to begin using new boilers by the 2024 winter season. Cross your fingers. In this rendering, we are showing how this phase one project will add to the south side of our existing west heating plant, and a future phase two project is anticipated in the future that will add to the structure as we note here on the diagram. Next slide, please. One of our larger NIU-led efforts has been the relocation of the nursing program. Since April, this effort has been preparing the necessary spaces to support the transition of this instruction from the former nursing building along Normal Road and resuming classes next week at the Wellness and Literacy Building along Bethany Road. With the transformation of the underutilized spaces in the Wellness and Literacy building, the nursing program classes should be well situated to continue until the ultimate relocation to the Health Technology Center in the coming years. Next slide. A significant opportunity to change the campus environment is being provided by our City of DeKalb colleagues. While considering options for needed improvements to the Lucinda Normal intersection by Holmes Student Center, the option for a roundabout intersection arose. This led to the thought of rethinking the section of Normal Road that dissects our campus. So the idea of closing this section of Normal Road for the benefit of pedestrian safety and expanding the green space for the campus ended up being embraced by both the city and NIU and eventually became codified by a city ordinance. This will be a multi-year effort, which began a couple weeks ago with the Normal Road segment being closed and some traffic patterns on the south portion of the road being rerouted. The next step will be the transformation of the actual Lucinda Normal intersection to a roundabout next summer, 2024, followed by transforming the closed section of the road to an actual green space, hopefully the summer of 2025. Next slide, please. There were numerous other improvements made throughout the summer. Some were photogenic and others were not. Some of the more visual ones were outdoor operations, commonly addressing water integrity issues with roofs or building envelopes or others, underground utility repairs and paving operations. One of the more common interior repairs that had to have a particular focus this summer was with elevators. We had some 20 elevators at various stages needing repairs throughout the summer, and this will continue into the fall as well as parts and technicians are able to meet our needs. Some of those elevator repairs were planned events and very well coordinated. Others were we had to get it done because they broke down unexpectedly, so we did what we had to do. Next slide, please. Finally, I commonly highlight our larger projects, which are executed by our great contractor partners. But before I end this segment, I wanted to take a moment to make note of the often less glamorous and often taken for granted operations, which nonetheless contribute significantly to ensuring the campus is ready for our fall semester, really as well as any time of the year. While clearly not all inclusive here, I do want to sing the praises for our in-house teams that meticulously work the details of cleaning spaces, maintaining grounds, operating utility systems, maintaining buildings, and work in the variety of other logistical support that provides a solid foundation for our campus to operate effectively. So I want to publicly thank our dedicated in-house staff for what they do every day. Next slide, please. Now, while I pause for questions for this segment of the presentation, I did want to note how we've been working with the marketing communications team to help create an interactive map. So when you find some time, I would invite you to go to this website and check out our pins that we have across the campus map here. It tries to illustrate the major projects that we have going on, and we're going to do our best to keep this updated as we go into the future. But when you do step back and look at the map and where the pins are, you do begin to realize, wow, we do have a lot going on. Are there any questions I can answer about this segment of my brief?
Yeah, let me ask one first, and then I'll hand it over to you, Montel. Can you go back to the slide on Normal Road? Is that possible?
Yeah. Slide six.
So while I'm all in favor, tremendous favor about returning Normal Road to green space, I think that's amazing. I'm a little curious, how does a roundabout improve safety for our students crossing Lucinda, you know, to come over to Holmes Student Center, or you know, to come over to this side of the campus? Because, you know, with a roundabout, at least my understanding of roundabouts, that I know of, there's no stoplight. So how do students cross the road when there's a roundabout there?
Right. That has been a deliberate discussion with the city, and how do we handle that? And we engaged our Disability Resource Center and some students to actually give us some feedback on that.
And faculty and staff, everybody who's crossing the road.
And what we've studied was, this is a concept that the rest of the world uses to a great extent. It's just the U.S. that really doesn't do a great job in using roundabouts. And it's been shown statistically that things are just inherently more safe because traffic slows down as you go through the roundabout, making it safer for pedestrians to cross. Now, you can even enhance that safety by having some lighted signal crossings, and that's what we're envisioning for this. So you take the pedestrian crossing, back it away from the roundabout a little bit, and have a signaled crossing right there as necessary for people.
Okay. Trustee Gales?
Yeah, that is our life. I'm looking at my director of Architect and Engineering Services. Most of the larger projects falls to her team. For every project, even a state project, we assign a project manager, someone of our employ that watches over the project. For state projects, we partner with the Capital Development Board. They have their own project managers, and collectively we work through the contractor partnerships to execute the project. When changes come up, we evaluate them. We evaluate what's in the best interest for NIU, what's the financial implications. So it's not just whatever the contractor asked for, of course. So.
And we're in charge.
We are in charge, yes. Even when we're partnering with the Capital Development Board, technically they're the authorities awarding the contract, but they look to us and say, is this what you want, NIU?
Other questions or comments for John?
Okay, if not, let me continue. I want to turn the discussion over to the other in-house team that's been working very hard to ensure a major investment that's upcoming with the campus with the Health Technology Center will be well considered. I'm going to introduce this team consists of Belinda Roller, our Director of Architecture and Engineering Services, Leslie Matuchewicz, the Senior Associate Dean for the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, and Beverly Henry, who is a professor in the College of Health and Human Sciences, who previously served as the Interim Dean. So this is a very good team, and I'm going to hand it over to them to tell you more about the Health Technology Center. Since I can't talk, please do so.
Thank you. So good morning or good afternoon. Thanks very much for having us. We're really excited to bring an update as far as the Health Technology Center is concerned. So for those who remember 2020, which actually seems some days long ago and some days not so long, the state of Illinois granted NIU $77 million for our first new academic building in over 20 years. So this brings us to today and the possibilities of the Health Technology Center. What we want to do is think about presenting to you kind of some highlights of the building, how we think it's a real exciting opportunity to really do more for our students, faculty, staff, and community. And then also explain how the planning was a collaborative process across campus since it first began. And then the location, major programming, and some other highlights are going to be part of our update. So next slide. So these guiding principles really were what we followed throughout our planning process. So if we think about these, it's to integrate technology as the connective tissue for the whole building, to house NIU's clinics, increasing access for patients and families, and to serve better our larger NIU community, to support family faculty members from a variety of fields, to bridge together disciplines from across colleges and fields of study in order to provide a home for groundbreaking research, and access to collaborative spaces and technology. in order to help us overcome some difficult challenges, and also to engage students who work in cross-disciplinary or transdisciplinary environments in order to mirror how it is that they'll work in the workplace and build a healthier tomorrow. The guiding principles and themes shown here were a driving force during our program development analysis and will continue to be very present as we work forward towards completion of design. Next slide. So this slide focuses on our collaborative process and what that really began the spring of 2021 with representatives from all the colleges, research innovation partnerships, the NIU Foundation, and then individual students and undergraduate and graduate students participated in this process. The group provided very broad perspectives on what it is, the purpose, and the possibilities of this new building were. And part of their work also included doing some national benchmarking on other buildings that were happening and being built and what those priorities were. Then from the summer of 22 to through the spring of 23, the steering committee and advisory groups participated in program development and analysis. It's a phase that we just completed, which prompted our desire to kind of update you. And when we think about the NIU of individuals that participated, again, we tried to reach out to, and it shows the five advisory groups here, research, clinic, engagement, teaching and learning, and then we think about simulation and how it can weave through a lot of different education programs. So we met at advisory groups and collectively with at least, if not more than 50 NIU faculty and then staff and students. NIU engaged the SLAM Collaborative and Halliburton Root for program planning and design. If you can see the timetable on the bottom, you can see the stage we've gotten to at this point. And I'll turn it over to Leslie.
Hello. So I am excited and take, oh yeah, sorry. Next slide, please. The primary goals of this building provided initially by NIU leadership and then refined both in concept and in vision by many stakeholders over several years are interpersonal training of NIU students and support for transdisciplinary research. These are our two goals for this building. And from the beginning of the program planning stage, the needed spaces to achieve these goals, using those goals as our driving factor, they were reviewed alongside with the allocated state budget. So, although the initial building request was for 130,000 square feet, estimated at the time it went in, the current market prices reduced the overall square footage to closer to 80,000 square feet. With a total of approximately 52,000 square feet for living space, what we would see in the building if we walked into a building, and approximately 28,000 for infrastructure. And that's about a standard breakdown of 35% for infrastructure to 65% for building space. Some of the top priorities, therefore, had to be considered in terms of reaching that mission and vision and how we picked what spaces moved forward. And so this slide outlines and summarizes some of the different spaces that we have decided at, in a committee, not the three of us, but the whole stakeholders have decided are really important. And so those include the classrooms. We are interested and we support in investing in classrooms, new high-tech classrooms for our students. It includes simulation space. That's really critical for the health and human sciences group. That would include nursing, physical therapy. And so those are really important, especially in terms of upgrading the infrastructure and the technology that is available, because the technology has moved far and we want to bring it to our students so our students can be trained on state-of-the-art equipment. The health clinics also will be moving, that is the primary goal of the health clinics is to train students, but it also serves the community in that they are working on people who need their services. And that will be integrated into the building. And the concept of this is that you have all levels of students in this building from freshmen until graduate school. And that's by design, and it's also across disciplines. So that you have physical therapy working with nursing that could be working with basic biology, since they deliver the courses, and all of those are centralized into one building space. In addition, in the building, there are spaces for research and innovation that will include a beautiful innovation studio is the plan. And then there will be office support areas and social and community areas, a nice reception area for gathering, a nicer, bigger hall that you could do talks in, as well as hold larger classrooms. Next slide, please. So the center is going to be, the new health technology center will be located at the site of the current Lincoln Hall at the northwest corner of Annie Glidden and Lucinda Avenue. The building is going to be a critical connection between the west side of the campus and the east side of the campus. This is going to connect those two sides. In the west right now, it has housing, athletic fields, and then to the east is all the academic and administrative buildings. And we see this as a nice transition space, and we are really hopeful that it will be its own destination for students, faculty, the NIU communities, in terms of classes, research, talks, healthcare at the training, clinics, and also, you know, food, an option for a food court or coffee or social hour. So that's our goal with this building. And so the new center is really going to pull together from the first level classroom that the students see all the way through the clinics and graduate training. That is the goal of this building. Next slide, please. And Belinda will take over now.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to have to put the glasses on. So sustainability. With the president's goal of net zero by 2050, sustainability has been an integral part to the planning for this project. LEED, which most people hopefully know, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, is the most widely used green building rating system in the world. LEED provides a framework for healthy and sustainable buildings. And within the project design and specifications, we'll be attaining points on a LEED scorecard, it's referred to, within different categories related to sustainability. The circular diagram that you see on the screen shows the different categories for where and how points can be attained. Some examples include the use of renewable energy, building system automation, higher water efficiency with, for example, plumbing fixtures, sustainable construction waste management, heat island effect reduction with roofs, parking lots, et cetera, there's a whole variety of ways that we can achieve our goal. So all state of Illinois funded projects are required to be at a minimum LEED Silver. So for example, Stevens Building was a LEED Silver project. The goal for this project is LEED Gold. As a point of reference, aside from associated fees for evaluation and commissioning costs, the increased construction costs for different levels of LEED varies depending on what you're doing, but could be in the vicinity of 5 to 10% higher than a non-LEED project. So we will be continuing to work through LEED in our design, and then we'll have more information on the specifics of that as we get to our next update for you. Next slide, please. So during our programming phase, once types and quantities of spaces were defined for the building program, the design consultants began to develop adjacency diagrams and eventually conceptual floor plans to start to flesh out how the building might lay out. Discussions were held with the steering committee and focus groups regarding what spaces made sense to be together or separated, considering need for privacy, accessibility, convenience, visibility, etc. This is where we start to see something that begins to look like a site plan, floor plans, and basic 3D massings. As we stand at the end of program analysis, we have two concepts that will be moved forward into design. Ultimately, we will end up with obviously one finalized design, but we'll be taking parts and pieces from both concepts to get to our finalized building. What you see here on this slide are two variations of a site plan concept which we're currently referring to as Campus Connection. It is a two-story concept located along the full southern edge of the site facing the rec center with some parking behind or on the north side of the building. The two options show how this concept could be expanded to include some enhancements if funding allows. Next slide, please. So then looking at the interior organization of this concept, it allows for visibility to some of the health program activities while still maintaining privacy for patient entrance to the clinic and other functions that require more focus and avoiding distractions. Level one has a large meeting hall, the clinic, lab spaces, classrooms, faculty touchdown, and cafe. And then level two has the simulation center, skills and assessment labs, research space, admin, and the innovation studio that Leslie mentioned. The bottom right is a preliminary 3D exterior massing. Here you'll see the innovation studio and cafe located at the east end of the at the east end of the building at the intersection of Annie Lynn and Lucinda. And this is announcing the building at this high visibility intersection. And then the large meeting space is at the west end, so it's kind of like a bookend on each side. The clinic faces north and has its own private entrance and close parking. The Campus Connection configuration is intended to draw students and visitors in and through the building. So for example, first-year students walking from the dorms to the north and west will have the opportunity to be exposed to some of the activities happening in the building as they make their way across to their Gen Ed classes. The foundation is working on donor funding possibilities for the building with the intention to gain some potential enhancements, including additional lab spaces, an enlarged clinic, and more study space. Next slide, please. Here is the second concept, which is currently referred to as Under One Roof. Sorry, this is the lingo from our consultants. So, it is a more compact footprint and is a three-story approach. This option with reduced overall footprints potentially leaves more space for future expansion on the site down the road, and currently is the version that is best meeting our budget. On the right is a preliminary 3D exterior massing for this concept. And here again, you'll see the Innovation Studio front and center hovering at the east end by the intersection of Annie Lynn and Lucinda, again announcing the building. So that's obviously a common theme with both options. Next slide. So here again is the interior view of that concept. And this concept organizes the core elements around a shared two-story communal space. Similar to the first, the Innovation Studio is located at the Annie Glynn and Lucinda corner to draw attention. And it has one level, it is up one level, and then the cafe is below. Most public spaces are located on the ground floor, including the clinic with its own private entrance. And then the three levels allow for most private spaces to be on the top level, with virtual reality spaces on the second and large meeting room, and then classrooms on the first floor level. Next slide, please. Here's the eye candy slide again. So this slide, before Beverly comes back to speak about next steps, shows us some images to whet your appetite for when we will come back to you next time. Beyond the basic adjacencies and site diagrams that we've shown you today, these real-world photos are examples of the feel of spaces that we'll be working with the design team to flesh out as we move into detailed design. Beginning top left and working clockwise, we have kind of open design with natural lighting, wet lab for teaching and research, classroom layout to encourage active learning, and then drop-in space for student and research work groups. So hopefully the next time we come back to you, you'll get to see a lot more. I'll hand it over to Beverly.
So just to wrap up, next slide, just a few next steps in our planning. We appreciate very much the support of NIU Foundation. Anyone who has built anything in the last decade knows that the dollars from 10 years ago do not purchase the same thing as the dollars from the end of our time. We're looking at with our timeline. Actual project costs could range anywhere from $10 million to $40 million beyond the allocated state budget. Moving into design phase, we're going to be refining the basic program and consider what enhancements we can afford and have some donor support for in order to ensure that we get the building that we need in order, again, to help NIU move forward in exciting ways. The dollar commitment needs to be firmed up in about a year, in the next year. The current phase that we're working on, design completion, should happen through this fall and next spring. So at that point in time, we need to have good ideas of what we're working towards in 2024. Potential construction targets are about early 2027, which is just right around the corner for some of us, and occupancy at that timing, whereas there's a 28-month construction period prior to that in order to be go time. We hope to be able to bring you, as Belinda said, another update in about a year from now as we progress from the schematic phase to the actual design development in order to what the building could look like. So thanks very much for your attention, and any questions?
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Henry. Any questions from the board? Trustee Butler?
So this, is it possible to use the state funds dedicated to this project for the demolition of Lincoln Hall?
Yes, and the time, oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, Lincoln Hall demolition is part of the project budget.
Okay.
But if we have other money to spend, we can always do that too.
Now, I know we're moving the nursing program over to the former Monsanto building and such, and we got an update on that. I'm assuming that this building will house the nursing program.
Right. It'll house the classrooms and the simulation areas and things like that for our undergraduate nursing program.
I saw a pretty big area for clinical the schematics. Will this allow us to increase the enrollment of our nursing program?
So I will leave it to Dean Fiala to talk about specific enrollment numbers, which she's probably not ready to today. We look at two different ways to increase the nursing program. One is through enhanced features, and then also cross-disciplinary. So for example, in that clinic right now, our nurses don't have any clinic exposure on NIU's campus. So we're hopeful to be able to bring in a comprehensive care clinic. Kind of depends on how far the dollars go. So, and then also interdisciplinary work in the simulation center with programs in other disciplines. The numbers, they are working on numbers to say how much staying competitive, staying with what we have, starting to roll out those admissions criteria. Yep.
Yeah, because I'd be interested to see if there's any thoughts about, since we are putting dollars into the building that the nursing program is moving into now, up on Sycamore Road, is there any thought to continue to use that space to complement the nursing program so that both spaces are being used, the new building and, you know, where they're relocating to, in order to increase capacity, just because there's such a shortage of nurses in our country right now.
It's right. So I was just going to say that we look at enrollment. So nursing program enrolls twice a year, and they're looking at optimizing that enrollment. And if they can increase it, then in the meantime that they will. And then however our facilities are used will be thought to benefit students from multiple programs. So it could be kinesiology and physical education could participate in some of the clinics, and that will help as far as their student experiences.
What I was going to say is nursing is one of those programs where physical space can be constraining, but there are other constraints. What we're planning here will address some, but not all of those. So probably the largest value of moving into the swing space in the Wellness and Literacy Clinic is the ability to start promoting interprofessional education and dialogue right away. So when we do have the new building, our programs will be really used to that type of collaboration. We'll be having that type of teaching and learning environment, and we'll be able to attract the type of funding you can from other sources external to the university for those. With respect to nursing, in addition to just physical space, meaning seats in classrooms, there are two other large constraints. One is approved clinical experience, and the simulation lab and the clinics will help that to some degree, but it's not going to solve all the problems that we potentially have with that. It's just getting harder and harder in a very lean healthcare environment, coming out of a global pandemic, to make sure that we have the right hospital partnerships to give our nurses the clinical training that they deserve. That's why our RN to BS programs, which are largely online, since you have clinically experienced nurses who are RNs going in, those have essentially unlimited capacity. The other thing that's very hard for all nursing programs, including ours, is finding PhD qualified nurses to be the faculty to teach those programs and maintain their accreditation. And while this does not address that directly, I will say that, you know, faculty who are sought after in their disciplines really like to work in attractive spaces. I think, you know, with respect, Dennis, when you and Stacy donated the money for the College of Business, you took a tour of the previous building and said, we're not going to have a world-class business school if these are the facilities we offer the faculty. And I'm hopeful, very hopeful, that having the beautiful facilities that look like the eye candy slide, that you know, we'll attract more faculty than we can retain. I just, you know, while I have the microphone, I know it's late, but I just want to say that this team has done an incredible job. They went into a pre-design phase to really think about the lens and the criteria that should drive all the decisions, not just at the dreaming stage, but when you're at the, you know, our ambitions outlive our resources stage. They have stayed true to that. They have been inclusive in the dialogue across campus. They've worked really well with the private partners. They've worked great with John Heckman and all the people in that division. And I think they're worthy of a round of applause at this stage and every stage.
I would share with you, and then I'll open it up to other questions from the trustees. As I travel around the Midwest and I travel around the Chicagoland area and I meet students or I meet people who have interfaced or gone to our College of Health and Human Sciences, the reputation that you have is extraordinary. So to Dr. Freeman's point, you know, having a facility that now will attract and recruit the best professors, the best faculty, staff, students, you've got the reputation, and that's first and foremost, right? So this will only add to it. So,
and thanks to both of you. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, I gave a shout out to some of the people that have helped us in the planning, but we couldn't do it without a DO-IT representative and a foundation representative. We really did attempt to try to bring in voices from across campus and across colleges to make it a great building for NIU.
Montel?
I wanted to ask in terms of the cost for construction and talk a little bit about DO-IT as well, because, you know, I love that idea that this is going to be a LEED certified building. But I think about the technology too, whether or not it's going to be equipped to handle 6G and the other G's that are coming after, all that stuff. And then what's the connectivity that we have to the outside world, to the other health facilities? Is it attached to the ring? Is it, how does all that work?
So we've done some early discussions on this. We'll make sure this building has some of the higher end speeds that our campus buildings offer, just for the very purposes of connecting to technology. We have to have that if this facility is not only going to connect to campus, the world. We've got to make sure that we do that. We also have to be thoughtful about Wi-Fi connectivity in the facility, make sure it's as robust for our student and faculty and staff population there, along with relevant technology in that room that meets the needs of a health technology facility. So we're excited about the intersection.
You think there's opportunity potentially for corporate sponsorship in the area of technology to help defray some of the costs associated with at least the technical equipment technology that's got to go in the building?
Could be, yeah. I mean, it'll part of that will inform what finally gets spec'd out in terms of the specific needs of the building and how well suited our central IT organization and campus resources are to, and the overall project budgets are to fulfill the needs, and to the extent that drives us to look for third parties out there, that's something that we'll always look at.
And then the other question I would have is, how much money are we looking for from the foundation in order to supplement the cost of construction?
Pretty soon we're going to have the whole
one more point to your first question. The consultant group that we have has built these kinds of buildings before. So they know what the that 35% infrastructure cost includes, what's needed in order to launch these types of technology rooms.
The question about fundraising is still an open one. You saw the range of 10 to 40 million. I'm a little nervous about the $40 million number, but we are in a campaign. We are in a big campaign, and this will be a very prominent project that will be featured as a marquee priority. So, you know, the challenges we have is that there hasn't been a deep history of fundraising in this college outside of the School of Nursing, but this is a great opportunity for us to think more broadly across our constituency. We have a lot of alums that do other things and graduated with different degrees that are highly engaged around the notion that this is, you know, that not only the first project we've done in many, many years, decades almost, but it's a spectacular forward-leaning vision for the future of this college and of health technology. And it's an exciting moment that we think will attract more than just alumni from the College of Health and Human Sciences. So I will tell you, we've had members part of this team, as you heard. We're also starting a fundraising team that's kind of dovetailing off. We've recruited a very talented leader, Debbie Gillette, who's coming to us as a senior director of advancement. She's going to be supporting Dean Fiala in that college, but she has a healthcare fundraising background in the Chicagoland area. So she will be leading this team, which will include some of my friends here. But so we're going to continue working on just focusing on that number. Thankfully, we have a little more time before we have to hone in on where between 10 and 40 million we're going to land. And I would like that number to be as big as possible.
Yes.
But we have some work to do. Yeah. We have some work to do.
I like the construction cost number to be low, but the
absolutely. Well, and it's an exciting, we have a schematic already worked out in terms of the nameable spaces in the building, which is super exciting because there's so much, you know, the clinics and the labs and the simulation theaters and things are, we think, will be very exciting for donors to consider naming. So there's a wonderful schematic to engage our donor constituency, and we're just at the beginning phase of that work. But thank you for the question.
I know where you're going.
Thank you.
Other questions?
So I'm curious. So I've been on the board for, you know, more than 6 years now. We've been talking. When did this started in 2017, 18?
You mean 2018. When the proposal actually went in?
Yeah. So it's 10 years to get a.
Well, when the proposal went in, it was probably 1926, but yeah. When it was actually funded.
And it was a computer science building at that moment.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, as we talk about cost, I've got a reason behind the question. As we talk about cost and getting things in line and everything else, there's a cost to time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we need to address, and, you know, in terms of a state and the money that's being spent. So.
Yeah,
anyway.
Just a quick comment on that. The unfortunate thing that happened in this case is the state, you know, announced you got the money for the project, but this happened prior to the pandemic, and that's when the clock stopped on the budget. So with all of our other projects that are on our state requests, the budgets are increased every year to align with escalations. But that did not happen for this one because it had already been approved. So essentially it's been sitting for 5 years without any escalations. And then we've also had the significant pandemic increase working against us, so.
Yeah. I said 2018 is actually 2019 when it was approved.
2019, okay. Still, it's 8 years. I wasn't a math major, but it's 8 years, so.
Any more questions?
I guess I did.
Yeah.
Some time
between classes to meet with students after?
Absolutely, you've got it. So one of the things we're looking at is to limit the use of straight offices, right? And to keep those housed in some of our other buildings so the faculty will still be able to walk down the hall and see colleagues. The only offices that will be set aside as straight, the only office on campus, would be if someone is working in the building the majority of the time. So the simulation center staff or the clinical faculty, they might have offices, but the majority will be touchdown spaces, places to meet with a student after class, places to make connections with students in the building and with each other in the building, but their solo individual office will be housed elsewhere. And that we took one step towards with the move from the School of Nursing. So the nursing faculty now are housed in Wirtz Hall, where the majority of our other faculty are housed. And that'll transition through, so.
Is that model working? I think we took a similar approach in the Cole Hall remodel as well, where there was this sort of office spaces that could be used by any faculty member, you know, right after the lecture or whatever. Are we seeing that that's working well?
So I'm not sure about Cole Hall, but nationally, that's what a lot of the builders are doing, especially for health buildings, is there's some of them are saying that offices aren't being used as much as they were before, so we're not even going to factor them in. But when we think about the touchdown spaces, the meeting with small groups, the collaboration spaces and things like that, nationally, those are being considered in building design and are being thought to be used once they transition into live buildings. I don't know anything specific about Cole Hall.
I don't actually know the design. I wasn't part of this during the design. There are actually no true faculty office in Cole, but there are spaces that they can meet with their students,
right,
like
right
outside
about.
The
right.
classrooms. Yeah. Like you can just walk right in. And then the staffing in the building are devoted to the museum. Mm-hmm. So it still works. The students are there. You can meet with students easily there. It's very visible, and I think that's part of the design plan for this building, meaning those touchdown spaces will be private so people can have conversations, but people can see people, mm-hmm. right? That's the goal, so it feels alive and well-used and excitement.
Thank you very much. Good job. Are there any questions from the trustees for George or his team on items 9B or C? Those are information-only items. We don't intend to review them. Okay. We'll move on to number 10. Are there any other matters that need to come before this committee at this time? Okay. Hearing none. The next meeting of this committee will be on November 9th of 2023. Is there a motion to adjourn this committee meeting?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Trustee Herrero. Ms. Doe, would you please call the roll to adjourn the meeting?
I have a loud voice. I can do this without it. Trustee Rita Athes. Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Committee Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee Tim Moore.
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Wesowitz.
Yes.
The meeting of the FACFO committee is adjourned.